This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. The Serie A season starting up. We're going to preview that with Mina Rizzucchi and Nicky Bandini in just a little bit. PSG getting their first goal and indeed first victory of the season. We'll discuss that as well. But we start with a story that we thought might never reach its conclusion. Gareth Bale is now reportedly close to joining Spurs, ready to leave Real Madrid. Finally, his agent, Jonathan Barnett, has said this is the closest Bale is to leaving Madrid since he's been there. Julien Laurent, Frank Leboeuf joining us now. Jules, is this really it? Finally going to happen?
It is, my friend, it is. He's waiting in Madrid, ready to jump on his private jet to come back to London to have his medical and sign his contract. Most likely to be a loan deal, and the two clubs right now are working out who's going to pay what in terms of wages, because let's not forget, he earns a lot of money. He's on 16 million euros net, which is around almost £600,000 a week, which is really a lot of money. So I think they do 50-50. Maybe Madrid pays a little bit more than the 50-50. They just need to work this out. But there's no doubt now, really, things have gone so well in the negotiations that there's really no doubt, unless something dramatic happens, that Gareth Bale will play for Tottenham again this season.
Frank, from the Spurs' perspective, I mean, is this the player Tottenham needs?
Well, if it's Gareth Bale that we all knew that the Gareth Bale who left Tottenham and after, you know, was concerned about football when he was playing for Real Madrid, yes, of course. I mean, it's a plus. It's a bit of nostalgia, I would say, you know, coming from the chairman, Mr. Levy, willing to bring back Bale to his former club. So I don't know if it's going to work, you know, but it's a... it's an opportunity, even if they can sort out the wage problem. It's going to be a plus. And when you have Bale, Kane and Son at front, I mean, you can dream of something fantastic. And as we wish to Spurs. Now, what will be their spirits? I don't know. What will be Bale's spirit and Bale mentality? I don't know either. We'll have to see and, well, wait and see him playing for Spurs if we want to have an answer.
Jules, Spurs is betting big on Gareth Bale. He's 31 years old, just 14 starts last season. How much is left? Fair question, right?
Yeah, you're right, and I think it's a fair question. I think it's a question that Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho ask themselves and their staff. Is it a big gamble? Is it a small gamble? Is it worth taking the gamble? We will know soon, I think. But one thing I think we can't doubt is that he must be hungry. He must want to come back home. He must want to come back to the UK. He must want to come back to the Premier League. He probably feels it's the right time now. Otherwise, he would have tried to do it last year or the summer before that, or even the summer before that. And I think the fact that he's ready to come back and leave arguably the greatest club in the world to go back to Spurs, where really everything started after Southampton, I think that speaks volume. And I think what we can't doubt is that desire and that hunger. I think he will be hungry, otherwise he would not come back, for the rest, for the fitness, because he's also had injuries, for the kind of level, and if he can respond to the pace and the way the Premier League is being played now, 7 years after he left, of course, I think they're genuine questions. I think he's still a very, very good player, an incredible talent. And I think if he's in the right state of mind, which I really believe he is, then he can be a success there. Let's see how Mourinho uses him, where he plays, how he's settling in, and how he gets on with Kane and Son and everybody else in the team. Because I still think that they need to still strengthen the squad in other positions. But if you can sign Gareth Bale and he's in that kind of good spirit, I don't think you can pass if you're Spurs.
All right, Frank, you know, one of the producers on our show, huge, huge Spurs fan, massive, won't stop talking about it. He's over the moon excited. Should he be? Should Spurs fans genuinely be excited about this signing and what it means?
They have to. I mean, they have to. It's like a kid coming back home, and we all know that Bale has in his feet everything needed to please any Spurs fans. That's for sure. Again, what will be his state of mind? Will he be ready up for making efforts like he didn't do for the past 2-3 years? Did he lose that? I guess he lost a little bit of pace, but he can, you know, mix that with the experience. We saw Ronaldo changing his game and being still a fantastic player. So I guess, and I want to think that Bale is as smart as Ronaldo and being capable of changing something in his game, but bringing fantastic power at the front of the attack of the Spurs. So yes, everything is possible. Yes, you have the right to dream about a bright future if you're a Spurs fan. But again, we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait. What's going to happen with Mourinho? What kind of tactics they're going to play? You know, when I see the body language of Kane and Son last game Spurs play, I wonder if there is a fantastic joy inside the dressing room and what's going to happen with Bale coming into that. Lots of question marks, and that's only fair to wonder. But yeah, we have the right, and all Spurs fans have the right to be optimistic, but we'll have to wait to have all those answers.
Frank, it's interesting that you mentioned the recent struggles for Spurs. I mean, if you're Gareth Bale, how excited are you to be playing for a guy like Jose Mourinho, given what we've seen for the last 6 months, how little this team has produced in attack?
Well, I don't know. Maybe Bale thinks that he will have a word to Mourinho, the way he wants to play, maybe the way his team was going to play. He's going to create a reaction coming into the dressing room, push his teammate forward. And see how Mourinho behave also, because he seems to be more Levy ideas than Mourinho ideas to bring Bale to Spurs. So we'll see. Mourinho is a stubborn person, so I don't know how he will welcome Bale, but I think he will have no other way to do so, is to make sure that he brings the everything to please Bale, to make sure he put him in the best situation to give Bale 100% of a leadership to his former new team.
So we know that Mourinho's stubborn, according to Frank. We know Gareth Bale's very headstrong. We've just seen it for the last few years in Madrid. Jules, is there something simmering here? Could we be headed towards some fireworks?
It could be interesting, really interesting. And I think what's also fascinating is that for the viewers who've watched the Spurs documentary, there's something that comes back a lot, and it's what Mourinho is saying to his own players. And I'm not going to repeat the word, but he says the C words a lot. And clearly he thinks that this Spurs squad is far too nice. Those players are too nice. They're always nice. They're nice on the pitch, they're nice off the pitch. Gareth Bale is a really nice guy. He's not the C word. He's not the C word that Mourinho wants in his squad. So you're right, there might be a clash somewhere where Gareth Bale, as talented as he is as a footballer and as great as he is, maybe he's not the kind of character that Mourinho really wants to have in his dressing room right now, because as we've seen in the documentary, he's not happy. He's not happy with the character. Last weekend, he was unhappy with the character. The players were lazy. They had the wrong mindset. They had the wrong attitude, etc., etc. And I think if Gareth Bale doesn't really, you know, go against that, and if he's like the others in the terms of attitude and everything, I think Mourinho could lose it with him, like we've seen him losing it with Ndombele, with Dele Alli, and with others already since he arrived at Spurs less than a year ago.
In addition to Bale, looks like Spurs close to adding Sergio Reguilón, the left back. When we did our preview shows, just a week ago, nobody had Spurs in the top four, and I think maybe only one or two might have even had Spurs top six. What do those two additions do for you, Frank? Is Spurs now a top four team if they can land both those players?
Well, when we see the first 11, I mean, you have, as I said before, the right to think that Spurs is going to go better. But I don't know how the chemistry will go with all those players. Reguilón will have to set up to a new championship, a new type of football, harder than he normally knows, you know, with the Spanish one. Everything seems to be better, you know, for Spurs. But again, we'll see what will be Mourinho's tactic, because the problem is not maybe the players who are too kind, too nice, but everybody agrees that the main problem is Mourinho. What's going on with Mourinho, with his way of seeing football, this tactic, only defensive, when now you have like three fantastic worldwide players at front? Will it change something? I'm not sure about that. So that's another point. And everybody is very excited to see how he's going to react to the fact that he has two new players who are going to bring something forward. Will he go with that, or will he stay with his normal tactic, which is I think about defending and maybe I react according to what's going on during the game?
Jules, it's a fair point. Spurs aren't known as a club that's going to splash a lot of money. If they give Mourinho these toys, the pressure is all on him now, isn't it?
It is, but I think it was before. I mean, for me, just quickly to come back on Reguilón, for me, that's one of the signing of the summer. There's no doubt. It's a great coup. I think they need to be praised and they need to be applauded for signing Reguilón ahead of Manchester United, ahead of a lot of other clubs. And for 30 million euros, I think it's an absolute bargain. And I think well done to Spurs, because he's going to be a fantastic left back for him. There's just no doubt. And then the pressure on Mourinho, but the pressure, I think, was there since he arrived. Let's not forget that after he arrived, the points per game that Spurs had been really, really good. And I think it was the third best in the league from the moment he came in until the end, with the pandemic outbreak and everything, and the injury of Kane. And I think if you look at the games with Kane, the points per game is even better. So he was doing some good things. In the end, it was maybe a bit underwhelming, but I think the pressure was already there from day one, because everybody thought that he would not succeed there, that he would be, that it was going to be a car crash. And he's still there for now. So I think the pressure was there, it's still there. Maybe it's more than Bale and Reguilón are coming, and that the team will look stronger than what it was a week ago. And then he will have to certainly give results and play maybe in a more attractive way than what he's been doing for the last year.
Let's turn our attention, gentlemen, to Barcelona. They get a 3-1 preseason victory on Wednesday. Messi scores a golazo, actually a couple goals, Coutinho as well. But Luis Suarez wasn't in the team. Then after the match, Ronald Koeman comes out and says that if he's still with us, he's going to be part of the squad. Jules, this is the same Ronald Koeman who came out before and said, whoever's not with me in preseason, I'm not going to count on. What do we believe?
And it's the same Koeman, Sebi, who said, oh, I spoke to Suarez, it lasted 1 minute. I told him that I didn't want him at the club, and I said goodbye. And now things have changed. The only way things have changed is because Leo Messi is staying, and because Suarez is his best pal, they're best friends. And you know what happened? You know that probably Messi said, OK, I'm staying, but Luis has to stay as well. I want Luis to stay, or something like that. There's no way otherwise. It could have changed so much from, let's get rid of him, we don't need him, we don't want to play him, to, okay, he might be staying, and if he stays, then he's in the squad, and then it's far too going from one extreme to the other without something intervening in between, and I think that something has to be Leo Messi.
We've talked a lot about the mess at Barcelona, Jules. It's becoming an embarrassment now, of course. Luis Suarez are trying to move him, get some money in from Memphis Depay. Now it turns out there's no money at Barcelona. We're not talking about 100 million euros, 50 million euros. Memphis Depay is like 25 million euros, and Barcelona don't even have that?
And you remember when they were all saying, like, okay, they're going to buy Neymar this summer. Neymar is going to come back. And we've been saying all along, well, how? With what? With what money? They tried Lautaro by trying to sell carpets and bits and bobs to Inter Milan, like if it was, like, you know, if it was a second-hand shop. It's just football doesn't work like that. Either you've got the money, you can spend it. You don't have the money, you don't spend it. And right now, you're right. They don't have the money. And I think they will have to sell first, and they're struggling to sell. They've always struggled to sell anyway. They're really bad sellers. And if they don't sell, they won't be able to buy. I think the pie personal agreement are pretty much sorted. It's just between Barca and Lyon. But again, if no money is coming in at Barcelona because they can't sell, then they won't be able to offer 25 or 30 for Memphis, which I think Lyon will accept. And for them to sign the pie, same with Wijnaldum, same with Serginho Dest, same with everybody else. If they don't sell first, they won't be able to buy anyone. But we knew that before. It's just what's the most disturbing in a way is that they really, really cannot sell anyone, just anything. They could not even, they just couldn't, there's nothing they could sell at this club. It's incredible.
Frank, put yourself in Suarez's shoes for just a second. You're the third leading scorer in club history. The manager calls you in 1 minute. He says, I'm done with you. 2 weeks later, you're somehow maybe back in the plans. How do you react?
Well, first, it's hard for me to put myself in Suarez's feet, but let's try. Well, I will be offended, but maybe, as Jules said, maybe Suarez had a discussion with Messi, and Messi told him, let's, I'm going to talk to Koeman. He's going to change his mind, because first he thought I would go, but now I stay, so you're going to stay with me, and he has nothing to say about that, so you're going to stay. What do you think about that? You're 31, you're going to get your wage fully paid, and you are at the end of your career. Nobody wants you, so you're just going to stay. That's the only thing. I think it's because Suarez is in a bad situation as well, that he can't find the club that he really wants. He has maybe the possibility to go to Atletico Madrid. I don't know if it's true or not. We heard about Paris Saint-Germain. I doubt about that too. And I think it's more his agent who tries to put him some other places, but he can't find anything because everybody saw last season that Suarez is at the end of his career. And it's hard to bet on somebody like that when you know that everybody, and it's not only Barcelona, has financial issues. So I think you have to accept the fact that you weren't who you've been, and you are not anymore who you've been, and that you have to consider everything. And staying at Barcelona, even if you play maybe only 5 games a year, is better than anything else. So that's the only thing I can say, being in Suarez's feet.
Frank, you mentioned Messi there. He was the captain in the preseason friendly, staying the captain of this team, a club that he has very publicly said he no longer wants to be a part of. You think he should still be the captain of Barcelona?
Yes, and I don't see anybody else being the captain. I mean, that would be absurd to not see Messi wearing the armband. I mean, Messi is Barcelona. Barcelona is with Messi, and Messi is Barcelona. So you can say whatever you want. I mean, we all know that Messi is still going to decide everything's going to be happening in the dressing room. Otherwise, it's not going to work with Koeman. And Koeman can go to fight with Messi. It's not possible. And that's maybe the main problem that Barcelona has.
All right, gentlemen, let's turn our attention to the one match that we're focused on today. PSG finally getting a goal, and I mean finally, at the very, very end of this match against Metz. Not just their first goal, their first win of the season. Look, the 3 points is welcome, but it wasn't really a great performance, was it, Frank?
It wasn't. It wasn't because many players are still missing. Some others are coming back, like Marquinhos, but not fit because they've been in quarantine, and they had to stay at home, so they can't prepare properly. And on top of it, they had a red card for Diallo, which I think, especially the second one, was a mistake from the referee. Then an injury from Bernat. They had a fantastic Di Maria, who opened so many rooms and spaces to his teammates. But they've been clumsy at front. Sarabia and Icardi have been very clumsy, also facing a good goalkeeper. But luckily, they again, because of Di Maria, they had the chance to score a goal and win. Yeah, it wasn't good, but they had many chances. And I think it's more because they've been clumsy, because now they get stressed that they can't finish the action. They did everything, let's say, good, but the last 30 yards were absolutely poor. So at least they won.
Julian Draxler gets the match winner there late. Jules, I'm watching this match and I'm thinking, it wasn't that long ago, a few months ago, before the Champions League run, that Thomas Tuchel was on the hot seat. You think if they would have drawn or even lost tonight, he would have been on the hot seat even worse?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. I still think he is. He is in trouble. There's huge pressure on him. They go to Nice on Sunday lunchtime. That's a huge game. And after that, the fixtures are a bit better and they can put a good run together. But starting with 2 defeats in a row in the league, which had never happened to them since 1984, was bad already. And it's not just the result, because there are circumstances why they lost those games. A lot of players missing, a lot of them tested positive for it, etc., etc. We're not going to go back on that. But I think what privately at the club was really disappointing is the lack of a coaching awareness from Tuchel in those 2 games. I think his man management was poor, his coaching was poor before the games, during the games as well. And I know I was told that inside the club privately, I think a lot of people are running out of patience, and players as well. That's what's been reported in France today, that there's a lot of players in the dressing room that are not so keen anymore on him. So he had to win tonight. He did. It was not pretty, but they won 3 points. That will ease off a little bit of the pressure. But the pressure is going to come back, like I said, on Sunday for the trip to Nice. And then if they don't win that one, oh, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but he will have to be very, very careful.
Frank, could you imagine it from the Champions League final to out the door in a matter of weeks? Is it fair?
Well, it's when you belong to big clubs, and we are in a, let's say, emergency dictator at some point in our modern time, and especially in football, where you can be a hero and a zero 3 games after. I mean, it's not only his fault, because, of course, you know, the coronavirus, you know, 7 players being caught with that, some players injured, some players sick, red cards. Of course, you have circumstances that you could say, no, it's not Tuchel's mistakes. But what he said after the game in Marseille, when he said that they fantastically play, you say, wow, that guy has a problem. He didn't see the game. He lost it. So, and we are not every day in the dressing room with the player seeing what he does or what he doesn't do. And that's maybe the main concern. But we have a problem, I think, with Tuchel and with, in fact, the dressing room of Paris Saint-Germain. Is it possible to have a coach who can hold a dressing room like that? That's the main problem with Paris Saint-Germain. And that will be a question mark until we find one day that guy, maybe Guardiola. But we tried Ancelotti, we tried Blanc, now we tried Tuchel, Emery. It doesn't work. Nobody can hold this dressing room with all those stars. How it's possible, I don't know.
Jules, it's a fair question. It's a big job, massive egos. If it does come down to it and Tuchel goes somewhere in this season, like, who's on the list for PSG to replace him?
Well, I think there's two outstanding candidates, really, and two that I think will be very, one, really appealing for a club like PSG, and also will be quite attracted to a club like PSG, they're Pochettino and Allegri. I think they're two outstanding managers. They both have pros and cons. I mean, for Pochettino, obviously, the fact that he played at the club, he was the club's captain, he still loves Paris, he's still very much loved in Paris, and what he did at Spurs is obviously a big credit to him. And then on the other hand, you've got Allegri, who's really close to Leonardo, who's won loads of things at Juventus and at Milan as well, who has that sort of winning mentality, I was going to say, although he never did it in Europe, but you know, that pragmatism to go and win things, that very Italian mentality of you play games to win. That was the issue in his last year at Juventus. He wanted to win regardless of the style of football and how well they played. People at the club wanted them to win by playing good football, which is not what he did. And many times he said at Juventus, the most important is to win. We don't care how. We just have to win. And that put an end to his career at Juventus. But I think PSG and Leonardo right now, we just want someone who can make them win the Champions League. And maybe they could think that Allegri would be better to do that than Pochettino. I don't know. But certainly if they were to get rid of Tuchel, I think it would be either Pochettino or Allegri replacing him.
Finally, Jules, the punishment starting to come down after the ugly scenes in the PSG-Marseille match. What's the latest there? What can you tell us?
I mean, the discipline committee decided to give Neymar a 2-match ban for his red cards on Sunday night for slapping Alvaro, the Marseille defender, in the back of his head. It could have been worse. I think he should be happy and the club should be happy with just 2 matches. Same for Leandro Paredes, who really started that huge brawl at the end that caused absolute chaos. Levin Kozava, who in that brawl punched and kicked Jordan Amavi, his Marseille counterpart, got 6 games, which is the heaviest sanction. And by far, Amavi himself got only 3 games. And then Pippa Benedetto, who sort of like started a little bit the brawl at the beginning with Paredes, got just 1 match ban. Either club, PSG or Marseille, have yet to say if they will appeal or not. Usually you don't really appeal those because there's a risk that they will be increased instead of being decreased. So I think it would stay the same. But the other big issue was the claims by Neymar that he was racially abused by Alvaro during the game. The committee has decided to launch an investigation, to take more time to study all the TV footage that they have, to look at everything, maybe to ask a few questions to both players next week or the week after. and then make their mind up and maybe shed the light on exactly what happened between them two on the pitch. And the other one is the claims by Marseille and Alvaro that Di Maria spat on the Marseille defender. For this one, I think they looked at the TV footage and they decided to summon Di Maria next week in front of the committee to ask him a few questions about what exactly happened. But if he was proven guilty to have spat on Alvaro, this could be a really, really, really big sanction for him, I think, big ban.
Frank, I don't know where spitting ranks on your list of no-goes, but spitting in the era of COVID, as a player, as a fan, how would you react to that?
Well, that was awful. I mean, when I saw that, and I lost my mind. I'm not supporting Marseille or Paris Saint-Germain. I don't care. I love football. When I see in the middle of a big pandemic, which killed so many people, and I see a player spitting on another one, I see that guy is crazy. He lost everything. I mean, somebody in Montpellier in April spat on cops. Because he was arrested, and he got 4 months in jail. 4 months in jail in France. What you gonna do when you see a player, because we all saw it, and I saw it at the first place. He turned his head, Di Maria turned his head, and tried to spit on Alvaro Gonzalez. So what's gonna happen to him? I mean, yeah, of course there will be a sentence in the football world. Will it be something else in the world, just in the world? As an example, I mean, that's absolutely a nightmare for me. I mean, we all try to be cautious or try to protect our others, and we see that on TV in a football game. For me, it's awful. It's worse than anything. Well, it's not worse than, of course, a racism comment, if it was a racism comment from Alvaro Gonzalez, of course. But it's nothing comparing to what we saw in the middle of the game, at the end of the game. We are going through something big. And Di Maria shouldn't have done that, for sure. So I want to see what the sentence is going to be. Very interesting.
Jules, if it is found that Di Maria did in fact spit, what kind of suspension do you think we're looking at? Games, or are we looking at months?
So in the scale of sanction that the French Federation and the French League have, it's a maximum of 6 games. For spitting in the direction or on someone, whether, you know, it's a player, if it's towards a referee, it's more than that, but another player is 6 games. They could decide to go heavier and to go for a bigger sanction. Again, it'd be interesting to see what they do and what they really take in consideration, but it won't be a nice interview that Di Maria will have to go through next week in front of that discipline committee. I mean, I think via Zoom or something, but it won't be a nice time for him at all.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Speaking of a nice interview, Gab and Jules are together for the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Download it today.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Serie A begins this weekend, and you can catch all the action on ESPN+. Plus, a couple games on Saturday, then we got a game on ESPN2 Sunday morning. Parma and Napoli, Juventus, the defending champions, they open their season Saturday afternoon at home against Sampdoria. Then on Monday, Zlatan and AC Milan against Bologna. For more on the upcoming season, we're joined by a couple of the stars of our Serie A Awesome podcast, Mina Rizzucchi, Nikki Bandini. Ladies, great to have you with us. Let's start with Juventus, a team looking for a 10th straight title. And actually, for a third straight season, they're starting with a different manager. It'll be Andrea Pirlo. Nikki, I'll start with you. What do we expect Pirlo's Juve to look like?
That's a great question, because the truth is that to a great degree, we don't know yet. He's only just on Monday submitted his thesis for his UEFA Pro license and had to defend that at Coverciano, which is titled My Football. So it'll be fascinating to read that when we finally can. But I think most people are expecting something fluid between a back three and a back four. And that's certainly what we saw in the one friendly that he's taken charge of. And sorry to sort of reiterate this story for everyone, but in case anyone is unaware somehow of this, Andrea Pirlo has literally never coached in professional football before. He had 9 days in charge of the under-23 team, so it is a mystery to know exactly what he's going to do. We've had one friendly to look at, as I say, a fluid formation in that game, which mixed up back four, back three. The one thing that he's repeated over and over again, he wants to play possession football, and he wants his team to win back the ball as aggressively as they can when they lose it. So we have an idea of the style. We maybe have some clues as to the sort of formation he's looking at, but a lot of it we're going to find out this weekend when the season begins.
Mina, we know you and your pro-Juventus ways. How much confidence do you have in a manager who, as Nikki just explained, really has nothing to show?
I have a lot more confidence than I had in Maurizio Sarri. And I know that sounds ridiculous, considering Sarri came in having just won the Europa League and having been at a club like Chelsea, obviously guided Napoli as well to amazing things. But the thing that I love about Andrea Pirlo is he does ooze that effortless and arrogance style of you know, demeanor, you can say. And that's something that I thought that Juventus really lacked last season. They didn't look like the intimidating team that I'm used to seeing on the pitch all the time. You hear Juventus, you hear Ronaldo, and you're usually supposed to be scared. And yet no one was scared of Sarri's Juventus last season. They were a team that shipped goals with ease. They never looked like they really believed in themselves. I thought that they just looked confused all the time. So it's not like I want to concentrate too much on the tactics at the moment. What I want from Juventus is for them to go back on the pitch and realize that they are Juventus. They are playing for a man who commands respect. They have Ronaldo and Chiellini in the team. This should be a side whose name alone scares the opponent. And then we can start looking at tactics going forward.
Look, I'm sure everybody would be thrilled to have a 10th Serie A title in a row, but this team is built, correct me if I'm wrong, to win the Champions League, especially with Cristiano Ronaldo. Is this team improved over last year's team, Nikki, and how much closer are they to a squad that can truly compete for a Champions League title?
It's definitely different to last year's team, obviously moving Miralem Pjanic out of midfield. You're swapping one conductor for a very different one in Artur. I think perhaps the biggest change that I see in it is the arrival of Kulusevski, who Juventus signed from, Atalanta via Parma in January, but left on loan at Parma for this last half of the season. I think what's fascinating about him is he's a player who covered the third most ground out of anyone in all of Serie A last season. He's 20 years old, and I just think that makes him such a different foil to what we saw at Juventus for a lot of last season. Ronaldo, nobody's questioning what Ronaldo gives you in terms of his talent, in terms of his ability to break games on his own, to score goals, to win those moments through pure force of will. But I think at times Juventus just looked slow. They looked plodding, they looked laboring, they looked like they didn't have that zip and that ability to change pace in a game. I think Kulusevski thrown into that mix, someone who will run, someone who does know how to beat a man, someone who did score 10 goals and got 8 assists at Parma as well, by the way, last season. I think he's really someone who can contribute something different. And I think as a foil to Ronaldo, this latter sort of career part of Ronaldo, where he's a bit, again, no longer playing a game based on speed, I think that's a really fascinating dynamic. And I certainly hope that can be something that is really interesting to watch this season.
Ronaldo hits his 30-goal plateau again last season, but Juventus' second-leading scorer is Paulo Dybala with just 11 goals. We can throw Kulusevski in there. Mina, does Ronaldo have enough help for the upcoming season?
I think this is going to be interesting because Andrea Pirlo has come out and said he wants his number nine. Obviously, Gonzalo Higuain is gone. There's talks of Luis Suarez, but we don't know if there's enough time to complete that deal from Barcelona because there's things to consider. We need him to be registered as an EU player for him to join Juventus. So there's lots to consider there. There's obviously Dzeko as another option. Now, if they do get a number nine and there is Dybala, and this is, and I have to say this again, this has to be Sarri's Dybala. This cannot be the Dybala that we saw under Allegri because in that case, it's a waste of talent yet again. So if we do have Dybala that we got from Sarri with Ronaldo, with Kulusevski and a number nine, then yes, this is an exciting team. Whether or not they can hold up defensively, I think that unfortunately still depends a lot on whether Giorgio Chiellini is present at the back because he is that wise man. He is a guy who knows how to communicate at the back. And I think he would really help the likes of Demiral and Matthias de Ligt to move on and progress as centre-backs in their own right.
Very well, let's turn our attention to the team that finished 1 point behind Juve in the standings last season, Inter. There's a bunch of players on this team, a bunch of questions I could ask you about, but I feel like it always boils down to Antonio Conte. Nikki, is he even going to be there at the end of this season? This guy's always so unhappy.
Look, I wouldn't tell you with great confidence that I'm certain he's going to be there at the end of the season. I think that if Inter don't win the league this season, he won't be back next season. I don't know if he'll make it to the end of the season. It's worth, you know, really stressing that even a sort of after the Europa League final, the comments he made after the final, the comments he made for the sort of clear the air talks that he had with directors, this big meeting they had, the head-to-head to talk about whether or not to go forward together. People very close to Conte thought that he was not going to stay. They thought that he'd reached the end. The things he was saying to them in private and the things he was saying in public all left open this very strong possibility that for a variety of reasons, and he insisted it wasn't just about money, it wasn't just about transfers, it was about how he felt and whether or not he felt he was getting the protection, as it was, from the club. There was a lot of indications that he wasn't going to come back this season. He has come back, but I don't think you're going to see that side of him, that competitor in him, that person who literally does not know how to handle not getting what he wants, whether that's the support that he needs or just the victories that he wants. It's not going to evaporate. He's still Antonio Conte. He's going to be the same manager we've always known, the same manager who everywhere he's been has kind of had a limited shelf life. Even at Juventus, where everything did go right, he lasted 3 seasons. So it's a small window for Conte. I think that if they win it all into this season, if they win Serie A, we might see him carry on another season after that. But I think that if they don't, then you know this might be one more shot and that's it.
Mina, he's asked for help from the board. He got Ashraf Hakimi from Real Madrid, obviously playing with Dortmund before that. How much better is this Inter team and is it ready to challenge Juventus?
Well, Sebastian, they didn't get Lionel Messi, so I don't know. Is it good enough? I mean, this is what Antonio Conte writes. He wants the very best. Now, this is what I think is really interesting about the whole thing. It is, he is somebody who complains a lot. He also wants the president to be present a lot. He wants to feel that safety and protection from management level. It's not just Beppe Marotta. He wants to feel like Zhang is always there as well, aiding him in every request that he may have of the squad. I think there comes a time when you wonder whether all of this is worth it. I mean, there's a lot of money being spent. Sometimes you look at this project and you think of players like Arturo Vidal potentially joining when the likes of Sandro Tonali were turned away. And you have to think for yourself, is this a man that can really take take Inter forward? Or is this a man who just creates too much drama, relies on sort of old school ideas sometimes in a world where everything is progressing and moving forward? So to be honest, he did a good job last season. I'm not going to deny that. I don't think it was exceptionally more than what Spalletti managed, considering what happened to Spalletti with the likes of Icardi. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, I mean, you say this, but Spalletti didn't have Icardi. He didn't have Nangolan towards the end of the season. It was a mess. Everyone was upset. And he's still, finished 13 points below without the likes of Lukaku and 1,000 other Premier League players. So I don't know. He has to win this. This is Pirlo's Juventus. Conte should be good enough to win this with Inter. And if he doesn't, I think we have to ask some serious questions here, even though no one wants to speak badly about Antonio Conte.
Nikki, a lot of his complaints come down to depth. I mean, they're going to have to challenge on both fronts and challenge Juventus. Are they deep enough?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just I can't not react to that from me. Like, I do disagree. Like, I think it was a qualitatively different brand of football that we saw from Inter in their good moments last season, and it certainly was uneven. And I'm not here to say that Conte got everything right, because he didn't. But the football they played at times was of a different, just a different calibre to what Spalletti ever produced, and that wasn't just about the signings. In terms of, Mina's already wants to come back at me again, I can see. I've just realised that I can't remember what your question was that you've asked me, because I was so busy responding to that. I'm sorry.
Sometimes you just got to cut Mina off. I appreciate it. Let's get to our predictions, actually. We'll keep bouncing around some of these ideas. Nikki, I'll start with your predictions. You take Inter to finally get it done this year. Now, my quick jaunt through the show's history book shows that you have picked Inter to dethrone Juventus on this run plenty of times before, but you're sticking with it. You're sticking with it. Credit.
Conte lover.
Plenty of times before, I'm scratching my head to think what I would have done before, because I thought last season I picked Napoli, which was even more wrong. So I'm not claiming that as a source of pride. But look, I think that we said it last season, and it was true. There was an opportunity for someone to get ahead of Juventus because of Maurizio Sarri, and we didn't know what he was going to look like and as a Juventus manager. And in reality, he was the most disappointing Juventus manager that there has been in this entire, most certainly most disappointing season they've had in this entire run of consecutive titles. Pirlo, I want everything for him. You know, I'm Italian. I adore Andrea Pirlo and everything that he's done as a footballer, but I do not know that he's ready for this job. I just don't. And I know it's tempting to draw that comparison with Zinedine Zidane and say, yes, look, he can come in and he can be the person who relates to players and who can get the best out of Ronaldo. But Zidane spent 2 years coaching the Castilla team, the Real Madrid B team. Pirlo just doesn't have that. Maybe it'll be fine, but I can't say it with confidence. I do think that Conte is, for all his foibles, a very good coach. And so I'm taking Inter, but it's a close-run thing.
Mina, we look at your selections. You clearly have confidence in Andrea Pirlo. You've got Juventus winning the title for a 10th straight time.
Well, the only way that I can see Nikki being great is if once again they get trashed in Europe, because that's what Conte does in the Champions League. I mean, he couldn't even win this Europa League. Oh, this is being really mean now. Listen, a lot of money has been spent on Inter. They do have a fantastic squad. And Conte is, of course, a very good coach. It'll be interesting to see how he handles all the pressures again, once again, of trying to do something in the Champions League. But it's interesting that we both have Milan there. Mm-hmm. I think when you consider Stefano Pioli's work and what he managed after lockdown, the side that he is creating, the wonderful midfield from Kessié to Bernacer to now Sandro Tonali, the forwards, it's a young squad that still has Zlatan for that, you know, veteran experience. It's a beautiful assembled team. And the fact that neither of us have Napoli or Lazio tells you quite a lot as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Nikki.
I was just going to say, I think it's a fascinating season from those clubs downwards. I mean, Napoli, I think, is sort of incredibly quietly, given what they've done, spent 70 million euros on a new striker. I'm saying, like, no one's talking about it. It's a club record because everyone's focused on the other teams. Napoli, who won the Coppa Italia, who got better under Gattuso. I definitely don't see them as outside this conversation for the top four. Lazio were 1 point behind Juventus prior to the lockdown last season. They really got messed up by the intensified schedule. They didn't have a squad built for it. There's several teams that could be really, really interesting in this conversation this season. I don't think it's just about Inter and Juventus at the top at all.
One more thing, ladies, before we let you go. A lot of interest from our U.S. audience about Weston McKennie, the 22-year-old joining Juventus. Nikki, what kind of role can we expect for him with Juve?
I don't imagine him going straight into the starting 11 because of the competition there is for midfield places there, but I think there's definitely a role for him going forward. I think that Juventus, again, with Blaise Matuidi moving on, perhaps there is room for someone to take up that sort of mezzala role of someone who can work box to box, who can put in the hard yards and also put in a tackle when needs be as well, because that Juventus midfield needs it sometimes. But I think most of all, he's just a player who you absolutely look at and think, what a place to be working under Andrea Pirlo. I've said that I don't know what to expect from Pirlo as a manager, and I don't know what to expect exactly from how he's going to use McKennie. But I think that if you're looking for someone to tutor him and help him get better, then he's definitely landed in a good spot.
Mina, as we look at the depth of that Juve midfield, who is his main competition for minutes?
I think it's interesting because he brings something different that perhaps, you know, like Nikki mentioned, doesn't really exist other than perhaps with Rabiot a little bit more in that sense. What we do know from Pirlo, at least what he's spoken about, is he likes fast vertical football and he wants to win back possession as quickly as possible. Now, Pirlo being Pirlo, you associate him to wonderful ball players. But I think that that's something that was spoken about as a weakness of McKinney. Can he really handle, does he have the ball pass completion rate that they're looking for at Juventus? But actually, Pirlo was very happy with what he's seen so far. He loves the fact that he's got a lot of energy. He thinks he's a very smart player going forward, the American. He likes that he is able to cover defensively, produce something going forward, and actually offer the kind of balance that Pirlo has spoken about all the time. So, I mean, I do think that it will still be Artur and Bentancur in midfield, but I do think they're going to rely a lot on the 22-year-old because there's going to be a lot of change so that perhaps they can actually challenge for all three competitions this season.
Ladies, thank you very much. Great season upcoming. A reminder, you can hear from more from both of these two on the latest edition of the Serie A Awesome podcast, a season preview with Mina, Nikki, Kay Murray, and Matteo Bonetti.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks for watching. Thanks to all those involved, Mina and Nikki, Julian and Frank. And now, it's what you've been waiting for. Extra Time with Steve Nichol and Shaka Hislop. Shaka Hislop, Stevie Nichol join us on today's edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. Gentlemen, great to be with you. We got some questions from the fans on Twitter, your many fans on Twitter, Shaka and Stevie. For both of you, and this coming off the news we saw today, Spurs starting to get busy here in the transfer window, or maybe starting to think about it, Gareth Bale and Reguilón from Sevilla, Real Madrid. If Tottenham are signing Reguilón is the question. If they get Bale moved over the line, do Tottenham knock on the top four once again? Shaka, what do you think?
Yes, but that's a yes with a caveat. And obviously, I think it's less about Reguilón than it is about Gareth Bale. If you can keep Gareth Bale fit for 32 games this season, I think Spurs have a chance of getting in the top four. I'm not putting them in the top four just yet, even if they get it, even if it gets done. But they certainly have a real chance. When a week ago, given what we saw, well, not a full week, but given what we saw from them last weekend, I was having those doubts. But that all, again, comes down to whether or how many games you can get out of Gareth Bale. That is still the big question.
Stevie, I'm trying to think back through the predictions that we saw in the show. I don't think we had anybody have Spurs in the top four. You think these moves make a difference?
Yes, I think they do. It's very difficult to say whether it catapults them into the top four, but certainly the two fullbacks they've signed, Doherty along with Gullian. How do you pronounce it again, Seb?
Reguilón,
yeah. That's not quite
Gullian is good. How we would can go with Gullian, Stevie. We can go with
Gullian. Right, the guy at the back. So they're two good signings going forward because, quite frankly, Spurs, over the last, what, 6 months on the field, I've looked a little desperate going forward. They don't look as though they're going to create on paper with Kane and Son and Mora, with Dele Alli. On paper, that looks great, but they haven't been doing it. So if you sign Gareth Bale and you've got two fullbacks now that going forward will deliver as far as assists, and Doherty will score goals, then that's going to push the rest. But I'm not going to turn around and say, yes, they get in the top four.
Shaka, is there any reason Wolves can't challenge for a top four spot this season, given that they don't have to worry about playing in the Europa League and getting fatigued? What do you say?
Listen, Wolves are an incredible team, and you saw that last season. And not having to compete in Europa League, I think, works in their benefit, without question. But the thing about Wolves is, as good as they were last season, you just always lean towards the usual suspects, because the question becomes, can Wolves do it two seasons on the bounce? Now, no real suggestion to say no, but early on in the season, with the usual suspects continuing to spend as big as they have been, obviously that's going to take... that's where everybody's focus is. And now you're waiting for the usual suspects to prove us wrong, and somebody like Wolves and Leicester to continue to exceed even their own expectations.
Shaka, how could you answer a question about Wolves and not mention Raul Jimenez, especially after yesterday's extra time? Stevie was so high on Jimenez and how he'd love to see him at Liverpool, right?
Okay.
No, Raul Jimenez. No. No, that was Dan.
Better than Firmino, right? And it wasn't me that said it. It was Dan Thomas.
Oh. Well, we didn't let him off, as you probably noticed, Seb.
I did.
I'm staying out. I'm done.
All right, next question. Ooh, Stevie, this one you will love. A stat attack. Liverpool won 14 games by a single goal last season. Considering this, will Steve change his mind on the favorites? I guess Stevie
acknowledged. Well, I'm going to say no.
Yeah, you picked Liverpool.
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say no for two reasons. Yes, Liverpool, since they won the league, defensively have been suspect. They started against Leeds defensively suspect. But I still think they got more goals in them, you know. I mean, I think you could argue that last season, they left goals on the table. So I think that could balance its way out if need be. So I'm still going to say Liverpool are favourites.
Speaking of Liverpool, Stevie, should Liverpool at least inquire about Luis Suarez given his current situation at Barcelona? What do you think? An Anfield return, Stevie?
Absolutely. Really? 100%. That would be a great... Well, it's complete and utter mix. It's being smart. You're going to get a guy, if after you speak to him, you're going to get a guy who I think is going to be happy to go back and play at Anfield. He's going to get a sufficient amount of games to keep him happy. He's quality. He will score goals. He will give you something in the front three that they don't, I think, possess. I mean, maybe you could argue they don't need anything else right now. But so it makes complete sense. You know, Liverpool have to get an experienced campaigner who can play at the level that Liverpool are going to be playing at. Or you've got a real star, an up-and-coming young player, who, again, is more than happy just to be there and get the amount of games that he might get. But to the Suarez one, 100% I would do it.
Let me ask this, Steve, though. Let me ask this. Let's say I understand, I hear everything you're saying, but if you do, what's the over-under on how many games Luis Suarez plays? If you do sign him, between, you know, rotating and his fitness. What do you think is your over-under games return for Luis Suarez if Liverpool do sign?
Well, you've got 34 Premier League, and you're going to do decent at Carabao Cup. There's maybe four or five games. You've got FA Cup, another four or five games. You know, so he's going to be probably getting about 15 games.
Hmm.
I mean,
I'm just asking genuinely.
I'm going to answer your question. It's the first question you ask him. Look, are you happy to get 15 games, whether it's Premier League, FA Cup or Carabao Cup? Are you happy to get 15, max 20? That's the first question you ask him. And if he says yes, get the pen out, get the contract out and get it signed.
Fair enough.
Shaka, a goalie question for you. Smart for Arsenal to sell Emiliano Martinez to Aston Villa, reportedly for like £25 million, after how well he performed when he stepped in for the injured Bern Leno. It seems like a week or two ago we were talking about Martinez as Arsenal's obvious number one. Now he's gone?
Yeah, I was hearing Martinez was Arsenal's obvious number one. But quite clearly, you know, Leno gets the nod because of the amount of money they spent on him, because of, you know, maybe people see him as their long-term number one. At the same time, I'm not so sure that it's Arsenal's choice to sell him. I think they were boxed into that corner, one by Martinez's own performances, and he now sees himself as a number one, and rightly so. If I'm Martinez, given what I did back end of last season, my performances and how highly my own stock rose, and I go to Mikel Arteta and say, listen, am I going to be your number one this season? And he says, well, I'm not so sure. I'm going to go with Bernd Leno and we'll see. I'm asking for a move. I'm saying, well, if you can't guarantee me first team football or that I'm going to be starting, I'd prefer to try my luck elsewhere. I've sat on the bench all these years. Now I want to be a starter. So I think he more, and I don't have any insider information on this. I'm just looking and just putting myself in his shoes. I would be pushing for that move more than Arsenal would be pushing for that move, to the question.
Next question comes from Andy. Should Jamie Vardy be considered a Premier League legend? He has more goals than Drogba and has won a Premier League title, unlike Steven Gerrard. Stevie?
Absolutely. I think he is. You know, he straight away became a legend, not just at Leicester, but in the Premier League for being the top scorer in a side that absolutely was the Cinderella story. And at 33 years of age, he's just won the Golden Boot. Please, somebody tell me who was the last person of 33 years of age to win the Golden Boot. I don't think there is one in the Premier League, is there? Apart from him.
Our next question, Golden Boot related, and Stevie, down to your pick. Stevie, how could you pick Agüero to win the Golden Boot when he hasn't won the award since 2015 and seems to get injured every season?
Well, because you know he's going to be in and around it. He got 16 goals in 24 games last season. The previous five, I'm going to say, he got 20 plus. So, listen, he's 32 years of age. We've just spoken with Jamie Vardy winning the Golden Boot at 33. So, why not Agüero? You know he's going to be up there. So, I would be very confident.
Sure. Picking Manchester.
Any amount of money on Agüero.
Yeah, picking Manchester City's leading striker as your Golden Boot. Not going out too far on a limb.
Sebi, I also think that Stevie's efforts at seeming impartial because he's picked a Liverpool goalkeeper to be goalkeeper of the season.
No.
He's picked a Liverpool defender to be defender of the season. He'll pick out a Liverpool midfielder to be midfielder of the season. But being the impartialist as he is, he went with Agüero.
Shaq, did you watch the show last week when I said De Bruyne would be the best player in the Premier League? Oops.
Impartial effort. Effort is the key word there. He efforts it.
Stevie.
Shaka, when you were
No. Raul Jimenez talks to
him. There you go. Now we're talking. Now we're making sense. Thank you, Stevie. Finally, been working on these guys for a while.
Swap deal. Swap deal with Wolves.
Yep.
Firmino.
Better than Firmino.
Firmino goes. Right. And Wolves get money, by the way.
Totally. I mean, he's at least worth that much, right?
Oh, why?
Shaka, when you were facing a penalty, did you ever try to put off or delay the attacking player beforehand just to get an advantage? Like when you're late to our showtimes here.
Well, first of all, I don't know what advantage you get by making the striker wait any. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's all in the striker's hands, and there's no pressure on a goalkeeper. I don't see the point in trying to delay it. I would walk to the side of the goal and see if I could pick up any cues from the striker in terms of his body language or which way he's looking, or and use that. But I was never one to like walk to the penalty spot and say something silly and or whatever it is you're trying to do. You know, the pressure's on him. Let him know that the pressure's on him. That's all.
Guys, we've...
So walk to the other side.
Go ahead, Steve.
So walk to the other side of the goal doesn't count.
Honestly,
what's the difference between walking to the other side of the goal and walking straight out?
When I say that, I'm not going to go walking, you know, up by the corner flag. Well, for starters,
Chuck,
I always kept a water bottle and a towel. Hold on, listen. I always kept a water bottle and a towel in the net, hanging on one side. So I'd go there, have a little drink of water, play around the towel, get my gloves all ready, like that. That's what I mean.
Walk to the side, get a drink, dry your hands. Yeah, there's no delay in that whatsoever. And by the way, you must be unique. I've never spoken to any goalie who's not trying to be clever in some way when he's about to face a penalty kick.
Stevie, give us the penalty takers. Does it mess with you then when you got to wait?
You asking Stevie?
I think it depends on who it is. I think the longer the delay, the more... Listen, penalty taking is all about positivity and positive thoughts, and the longer you have to wait, then those wee guys can start creeping into your brain, and then the longer you wait, by the time you're about to take it, you're an absolute wreck and you can't take it.
Speaking of absolutely...
That's why I didn't take penalties.
Never, not even one. We heard Alexis Sanchez talking about his first training sessions with Manchester United and then the reaction afterwards. Ritvik asked, what's your worst first impressions at any clubs you played at? Chaka?
Listen, it's a kind of an unfair question. I'll say this. Probably, you know, I was thinking about it, probably Portsmouth. But that, then again, that's not fair. I started at Reading. Coming from college in the US, so everything looked immaculate and immense, even though we were playing at Elm Park, which is over 100 years old. I thought it was the best thing I'd seen in all of my life. I then went to Newcastle, given everything that was going on up there at the time, with Kevin Keegan, etc., etc. Then West Ham, then had to take a step back down to Portsmouth, which is why, you know, kind of by default, I've said them, and then finished up back at West Ham again. So just in terms of first impressions of the club and the facilities, by default, not necessarily really by impression, I have to go with Portsmouth.
Stevie, who was the best player that you ever coached? Who was the most frustrating to coach? And why didn't you draft me coming out of college in 2005?
Well, because I saw you playing.
Unlucky you.
Yeah. Well, I coached the All-Star team, so there was a chap called David Beckham, mm-hmm. and another chap, one of your fellow countrymen, mm-hmm. Seb, Quintemont Blanco.
Nailed the pronunciation,
so
too.
The two of them were phenomenal. Blanco was brilliant. Mm-hmm. But I guess on a domestic front, I drafted Clint Dempsey. And so probably he went on to be the most successful player that I coached.
Pretty strong. It's a pretty strong draft pick.
I have to vent here. I've never seen anybody go over easier than Blanco. I played against Blanco a few times at international level.
No.
And if the breeze was strong enough...
Ale Moreno?
Yeah, that's a good call. Now, Blanco was worse than Moreno. Blanco was worse than Moreno.
No question. Moreno...
No, go ahead.
Yeah, but
go ahead. Sully Cuauhtemoc Blanco's good name here on Extra Time. Please.
No, not at all. He was smart. He was... think of Ali and then multiply it. You know, when I was at the Red...
For smart?
We'd play,
or what?
We'd play against Chicago. We'd play against Chicago.
I was wondering where you're going with that. He was smart. Think of Ali.
We would play against Chicago, right? And we come in at halftime, and then we come in at the end of the game, And all the defenders were all going, oh, Blanco, he's a cheating so-and-so, and all he does is dive. And I'm sat, I'm sitting listening to this. I'm in the coach's room with the door open, and I'm sat with Paul. And I'm sitting listening to this, and I'm turning to Paul and going, you know something? They're just too stupid. He's just too smart for them. All he was doing was putting his body in the way from a different angle so that these idiots would run into him and hit him. I mean, he was just too smart for them, but they didn't see it that way. They thought he was a diver. Number one, he was very clever, and number two, he had two fantastic feet. You talk about if you had a lineup, right, and got people to wear a football strip or a soccer kit, and you went down the line, he'd be the last one you picked because he doesn't look like a football player. But I'll tell you what, as soon as the whistle goes and you get him on that field and you get him the ball, my goodness, what a player.
Xhaka doesn't think so.
He's a diver. I'm sticking with that.
What does Xhaka think has been the biggest and best improvement in goalkeepers' gloves?
Oh.
How about that for a question?
This is right up my alley. Mm-hmm.
What?
The cuts in goalkeeper gloves nowadays are incredible, and the fit that you get. I say that, but I was old school. I like my gloves a little bit big, so the fit didn't really matter to me. But the palm on gloves now.
Starting to go hot.
Big gloves. put them up. Put everybody up. Get with these oversized gloves.
Try and get past these.
Moving on.
You were saying, Xhaka?
The palm on gloves now is simply incredible. And they've gone from the kind of foam that they were when I was playing, and they're almost a kind of latex now, which is far more sturdy, and the grip is a whole lot better in any condition. Their gloves are impressive now.
Xhaka, I've noticed...
That's my favourite ever extra time question, by the way. I love that.
I do. Right, just for you, Shaq. We have like four goalie questions. You know, that's what happens. What happens when Seb hosts extra time.
Mm-hmm.
I play into your strengths, guys.
Thank
Stevie,
you.
Stevie talks about Mexican internationals, and Shaka talks about goalies. Just like that. There we go. Raúl Jiménez, Cuauhtémoc Blanco. All the things that you want on today's edition of Extra Time. Thanks to Shaka. Thanks to Stevie. And we'll be back with you for tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Don't miss it.